Zyn nicotine pouches deliver nicotine satisfaction anywhere, anytime, which means Zyn pairs well with you, your personality, your schedule, and your spontaneity. Zyn fits easily into your bag, pocket, and into your life because it's smoke-free, hands-free, and hassle-free. So the only person who will know you have a Zyn pouch in is you. Visit Zyn.com or head to your local convenience store today to find your Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
School of Humans.
Hey, everyone. This episode's going to be a little bit different from the other ones you've heard so far, because this time I'm talking about a case that has been solved. So there was closure, and it's a case that I covered as a journalist. I decided to make this our kind of Helen Gone special Christmas episode because I really wanted to share this case with you. I learned a lot from it. It happened about this time of year, around the holidays, in 2017. It's also a case with the wildest twist I've ever seen, and I'm not saying that lightly because I've seen a lot. The person who committed the murder is not anyone that the public suspected at all. Most importantly, I'm sharing this because I think it contains an incredibly important cautionary tale about the dangers of social media, the impact it can have on crime stories, both for the victims and the victims' families, and for the people reporting on these cases. By the way, I am still working on the Christina Pipkin case. I'm doing interviews. I've had a huge response. We've had hundreds of calls. The people in Hickory Ridge and around Arkansas and actually around the country have been super helpful, and we're making a lot of progress in that case. I'm going to be doing another episode on Christina's case, my final one for now, when we come back in January after a break next week. So back to this week's case. It all started in Broomfield, Colorado on December 28, 2017. 19-year-old Natalie Bollinger was at home in her apartment. Natalie lived with her boyfriend, Joseph Joey Marino. She had moved to Colorado the year before to be near her dad, Ted, and her twin sister, Alicia, and some other family members. Natalie's mother, Rose Self, lived in Virginia. According to her obituary, Natalie was, for the most part, a normal teenage girl. She loved animals and nature and had recently enrolled in college with the goal of becoming a registered nurse. All of her friends and family described her as kind and loving, the kind of person who would do anything to help a friend in need. But Natalie Bollinger had also had a tough year. She had been suffering from depression and going through a lot of stress in her life. She had also, at different points in her life, used drugs, including methamphetamines and heroin. And she posted on Facebook about her experimentation with drugs. Joey, Natalie's boyfriend, said he went to work at 6 a.m. that morning. When he got home that afternoon at 3:18 p.m., Natalie was gone. Joey also had a 9mm Glock, and he noticed that his gun was gone. He apparently tried to call Natalie, but when he did, he noticed that her cell phone was at home too. That's when Joey became alarmed because Natalie was very active on social media. She was not the kind of person to leave her cell phone at home for long periods of time. Joey called the police and reported Natalie missing. He also called Natalie's mom, Rose. He told her he was worried because Natalie's phone was at the house, her coat was there, her shoes were there, and remember, this is the middle of winter, and she was just gone. Police said at the time that at first, they weren't overly worried because Natalie was 19 years old. She had the right to disappear or not contact people. And she and Joey had gotten into some arguments, like normal couples. But family members let police know it was very unlike Natalie not to be on social media at all. And also, family members let police know that Natalie had been dealing with depression and other issues. By the next day, Friday, December 28th, police were seriously concerned. Over the next few days, the search for Natalie Bollinger made local and then national news. Missing posters of Natalie with her distinctive look, the tattoo of a three-eyed cat on the nape of her neck, and purple hair were posted everywhere in town. The next day, on December 29th, police got a tip that a body had been found on land belonging to the McIntosh Dairy Farm. The body was in a wooded area north of Denver, Colorado. And later, once police described the tattoo on the body, the three-eyed cat, to Natalie's family, they were able to confirm that the body found was Natalie Bollinger. She was wearing black jeans, a black hoodie, black boots, and socks. She was covered in leaves. Investigators determined that she had been dead since the day she went missing. I'm Katherine Townsend. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Helen Gone Murder line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145. This is Helen Gone Murder Line. I first became involved in Natalie's case back in 2017, right after she went missing. I was working with Investigation Discovery, and when I wrote the article about it, I called this case a social media murder mystery because social media was involved at every single stage. And at every single stage, in my opinion, it both helped and hurt the case. It started early when Natalie's father, Ted Bollinger, posted a message on a TV news station's Facebook page. It read, "Just left the sheriff. My daughter was murdered." Now, this was before police officially publicly confirmed that the body found had been Natalie. Police said social media did help the case in some ways. The Adams County Sheriff, Mike McIntosh, said that those Facebook photos of Natalie's distinctive tattoos helped them identify her body. Then there was no news for several days. The whole town was talking about the case. On January 3rd, Sheriff McIntosh held a press conference. At the time, he said, quote, "I feel comfortable saying that there's not a threat to the community," end quote. Now, even though police did not say much more about the murder investigation, if you listen to this podcast or any other true crime podcast, you know that when police want to convey that they believe that the murder was personal and not, for example, something a random stranger did, this is often what they'll say. After that, people started to speculate that Natalie had some sort of relationship with her killer, with someone that she knew. And that's when all hell broke loose on social media. First of all, you had Natalie's family, and they were arguing amongst themselves. Natalie's father, Ted, had started a GoFundMe, but there was some controversy about that. People made allegations that the money wasn't being used properly. On January 8th, Ted said that the funeral would be the following day. But later, he said the services were canceled due to what he called issues with funding. And then, on January 11th, the other side of the family, her mom, Rose, and some others, said they were having memorial services for Natalie in Virginia. Eventually, Natalie's funeral was held at the Church of St. Therese in Chesapeake, Virginia. Since Natalie's social media was public, a lot of people went to her Facebook page and they found very detailed descriptions of what she'd been going through in the days and months before her death. Very quickly, they saw she had been dealing with a guy, someone she was scared of. And the final update on her Facebook page was a post about Natalie being stalked. Natalie's life had a dark side that she wrote about on social media. She talked about her problems at home with some family members, about depression, and about her experimentation with drugs. And of course, social media sleuths immediately started looking up information on anyone who was even tangentially connected to Natalie, including her father, Ted. Ted had a criminal record that included arrests for burglary, car theft, some drug charges, and felony assault. This is all, by the way, according to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation court records. 2 weeks before she disappeared, Natalie posted a statement on Facebook. In that post, she said she was scared because she said she was being stalked by a 37-year-old man named Sean Swartz. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all, it's Catherine. As you know from Hell and Gone, crime can happen to anyone at any time. When it comes to home security, your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe Home Security. Obviously, we cannot control everything that happens out there in the world, but when I'm in my own home, I feel very reassured by the fact that I have a home security system. And SimpliSafe is affordable, easy to use, and crucially, it's easy to get started with and then build on later as you need more functionality. They have a huge variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, with no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/hellandgone. That's simplisafe.com/hellandgone. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sean Swartz was someone Natalie had met a few years earlier. Then they lost contact for a while, and in 2015, they seemed to reconnect as friends. Sean also had a criminal record. He had been charged with theft in the past. For a while, Sean and Natalie became confidants, and they seemed to really share a lot of their problems with each other and support each other. But then it seemed like things started to turn. Sean was becoming fixated on her. And if you read the text messages, it seems like his fixation increased pretty dramatically throughout 2017. Later, he posted long text messages and social media message exchanges between him and Natalie, where they shared the details of their lives and supported each other. But at some point, it seemed like Natalie started to become afraid of Sean. Natalie claimed that Sean was obsessed with her, and she claimed he had driven across the country to see her and slept behind her work for weeks. She wrote, quote, "He's sent emails for over a year, close to every day, harassing me, making numerous different accounts until I block him again, threatening my family, telling me he'll kill himself in front of me, and sending my friends and family threatening messages as well," end quote. On December 14th, 2017, Natalie went to the police and asked for a temporary restraining order. That restraining order was granted, and a few days later, it was made permanent. She posted copies of the restraining order online, and from that, we could see that she claimed that Sean would show up in his car and sit outside her house for hours. When she didn't come out, he would literally just lay on the horn for hours at a time. So, of course, because Natalie had described this alleged stalking incident and it was one of her last posts ever on social media, people immediately focused on Sean. And pretty soon, they were asking, why wasn't he a person of interest? Why wasn't he being arrested? Meanwhile, Sean said he wasn't even in Colorado at the time Natalie disappeared. He said he had nothing to do with her disappearance, and he said he could prove where he was because he had receipts. Sean's social media showed videos of him posting these long rants against the system and sometimes against Natalie's family. Some of these videos seemed pretty scary, but at the same time, Sean also seemed like a vulnerable person. According to his own description of himself, he had mental health issues and nowhere to live. So this was a volatile situation because you have one person who's been murdered, you have a person who's kind of living on the streets and also said that they had medical conditions, including Asperger's and Tourette's syndrome, things that can cause miscommunications. Sean said he was unfairly, in his words, convicted in the court of public opinion. Sheriff McIntosh tried to calm down this social media storm and made a comment about how Facebook had been a mixed blessing in this case. The sheriff said, quote, "Facebook gets to put out that information before we can go through our official steps to make sure that we get it right. In today's day and age, it's kind of fascinating how much information we can gain from that. On the other hand, there is a lot of information that is absolutely untrue, false accusations. Our goal is to make sure that we're not headed down a rabbit trail that we don't need to go down," end quote. And I think the sheriff's statement really epitomizes the reality of social media in these cases. I'll admit, I sometimes get sucked into it too. When hundreds and thousands of people started discussing Natalie's case online and these groups calling for justice for Natalie Bollinger began popping up on Facebook, I was looking at them as well. People were staying up late at night and going down all kinds of weird rabbit holes. But then I started to get nervous because people went from sharing information to having this kind of mob mentality. The mob mentality towards Sean started to scare me, especially once it became clear that he really was having issues. In the beginning of 2018, I was worried that this whole situation was building towards something bad, that something very bad was going to happen. People were literally messaging Sean and trying to figure out where he was. By this point, he had gone to Boulder. He said he couldn't stay with family and was basically staying between motels and the street. I found myself getting very concerned for him. Also, some of his posts seemed very irrational and rambling. I started to wonder, would he do something to someone else? Would someone do something to him? The way that everything was playing out uncontrolled in this really public and frankly terrifying way seemed like it was spiraling toward some type of terrifying conclusion. On January 5th, Sean posted on Facebook basically challenging the police to come find him and, in his words, put me in the ground. Police arrested him that night. He was charged with second-degree assault on a peace officer and with resisting arrest. Then he was released on bail and posted a video saying the police had assaulted him. He wrote that he, quote, wanted my life to be over because my friends were afraid, not afraid of me, but afraid of public opinion, end quote. He then said that the Boulder police had antagonized the situation, assaulted him, and then charged him with assault. He alleged the police, in his opinion, were hoping that a vigilante would kill him, and when that didn't happen, they threw him in jail. And he claimed the police had lied to him. He said they told him he was going to go to a safe place where he could sit down and fill out a report, but he was taken to the hospital instead, and he could not handle the environment there, so ended up leaving. Now, the police claimed they were trying to help Sean by taking him to the hospital, but that Sean became uncooperative and started kicking and fighting with them. They say that's why he ended up with the assault charge. Whatever the reality of all that, you have a situation where in January, you have this incident with Sean and the police. You have headlines saying that a person of interest in Natalie's case was arrested. And even though the articles did say that Sean was arrested on an unrelated charge, let's be real, a lot of people don't read that fine print. They just see the headlines. So what they saw was that Sean had been arrested and they saw Natalie's name. And again, this added to that public perception that Sean could have had something to do with Natalie's murder. I should add that during this time, there were a lot of people trying to help Sean, sending him supportive messages, but there were also a lot of people following everything that he said online and virtually stalking him. Then the case took another dangerous and crazy twist. Sean posted a Facebook Live video, which has now been deleted, of himself in a motel where he said he had been driven to take his own life. The video showed him taking pills from a pudding cup. Several people who saw the video managed to contact emergency services. Paramedics rushed to the scene and they treated him. Sean made a full recovery. And while this whole thing with Sean was playing out so publicly on social media, in the background, other people were talking about Natalie's boyfriend and trying to figure out his timeline. The boyfriend, Joey, by the way, was completely cleared by police early in the investigation. He was very cooperative. Detectives on the case verified that he had been at work during the time when Natalie had been killed. In the background, detectives were doing some old school, thorough detective work. They were looking through Natalie's phone, all of her text messages. And there was a delay between the time when police got her phone and when they were able to access her password and get to her text messages. This happens a lot in cases because sometimes police have to get a search warrant from the provider. So there was a delay. But once they saw those text messages, they got a shock. It became very clear there was a very obvious suspect in this case. And it wasn't Sean and it wasn't anyone in Natalie's family or her boyfriend or anyone who the public expected. Because the man who police suspected of killing Natalie Bollinger was, in fact, a 23-year-old Domino's pizza delivery guy named Joseph Lopez. Up until a few days before her murder, he had been a complete stranger to Natalie.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Once police saw the text messages between Natalie and Joseph Lopez, which I'll explain in a minute, they went to the pizza place where he worked, and according to the arrest affidavit, he was cooperative. He realized he was caught, and he immediately told police what happened. And the story that Joseph Lopez told was wild. In fact, it's one of the most unbelievable things I've actually ever heard. If it was a movie, I'm not sure I would find it believable. But, like I always say, sadly, this is real life, not a movie. These are real people. And again, this is why when we cover these cases, I take that responsibility very seriously. According to the arrest affidavit, Joseph Lopez was randomly scrolling through Craigslist one night. He was looking at the Women Seeking Men section. He saw an ad with the headline, "I want to put a hit on myself," meaning, "I want to hire a hitman to kill me." And apparently, this ad was placed by Natalie Bollinger. Now, this sounds crazy and unbelievable, but according to the arrest affidavit, police went through the digital forensics very carefully. They went through Natalie's cell phone. They went through Joseph's cell phone. They figured out not only had he responded to this ad, but that after he did, Joseph and Natalie swapped contact details and they started texting. In the end, they texted over 100 times. They talked a lot in detail about the fact that Natalie wanted to end her life and she wanted help to do it. Now, during this time, Joseph Lopez, who's this kind of shy, retiring pizza delivery boy, adopts this kind of fake hitman persona. It's like he wanted to be this Jason Bourne badass type character, which of course he was not. And during the course of these conversations, he agreed to kill Natalie Bollinger. He agreed to do it, says the arrest affidavit, for an unspecified fee. Apparently there was talk of money, but it's not clear how much money. So then, again, according to this document, they came up with a plan. Joseph would pick Natalie up from her apartment on December 28th, and after her boyfriend left for work, that's exactly what happened. Joseph drove over and picked Natalie up. According to Joseph, they talked for a while, and they drove around. Natalie talked about the problems she'd been having in her life, her relationship with her boyfriend, and some other stuff. Just her general depression. Then, at some point, they started to drive toward the area where her body was found. Natalie had brought her boyfriend's gun with her, which she had said she would do. This is where the story diverges a little bit, because Joseph Lopez initially told investigators that he didn't kill Natalie. He said, yes, he did pick her up, they talked for a while, and then he said, of course, trying to paint himself in the best possible light, which many suspects do, he said he was trying to talk Natalie out of her killing herself. That's why he had gone there, to try and help her and get her to change her mind. In the end, he said he had just been altruistic, and then he drove her back to her apartment and left her there. So if someone did kill her, he said after that, she must have found another person to respond to the ad or maybe done it on her own. Joseph Lopez was arrested in February, and at around that same time, I was looking for source documents, trying to ignore the online chatter. I was actually on vacation. I was skiing in Colorado. I was in Aspen, and I decided to take a drive to Adams County, ignore all the online chatter, and request the arrest affidavit and a copy of the autopsy in person. And that's exactly what I did. Now, because I was in one of the Facebook groups, because I'll join any group that I can, I will do anything to find information that could close the case, I communicated with some people there. I let them know that I'd written a story for the Investigation Discovery blog and that the autopsy report was part of that story. It was really strange, though, because a lot of people said it was fake news. Later, a lot of people were very supportive and thanked me for trying to provide original documents in a case where there was so much speculation. But I think it's really important in cases like this to be able to find those documents, things that came directly from the medical examiner's office or from the police in the case file. Whenever possible, I always try to find the original source documents. And what that autopsy report showed was that Natalie was killed by a gunshot wound to the head. She also had a potentially lethal amount of heroin in her system at the time of her death. I talked to a forensic pathologist and asked them to weigh in on that autopsy report. I asked the question that a lot of people were asking, which is, would the drugs in her system have eventually killed her? And what the pathologist said was that's actually irrelevant, because even if Natalie did have a toxic amount of drugs in her system, even if she would have eventually died from an overdose, that wasn't what killed her. What killed her was that gunshot wound to the head. Joseph Lopez told police that Natalie wanted to be killed on her knees, executed from behind. But again, he said he didn't do it. But police knew that Joseph Lopez was lying, because what he didn't know was that police had his car GPS data, and that data showed that Joseph Lopez, or at least his car, had driven to the area near that dairy farm where Natalie's body was found. So then he changed his story. He said he did go out there with her, but he said Natalie shot herself in the head. Again, police knew that this wasn't true, because there was that autopsy report. The forensics showed that a 9mm shell casing was found several feet away from Natalie. Natalie had been shot once from point-blank range, but the killer had been a few feet away from her. In addition to that, the angle of the bullet was all wrong. The angle, according to the autopsy report, was left to right, front to back, and downward. Now, Natalie was on her knees at the time she was shot. She could not have shot herself in the head using a downward trajectory from several feet away. The story Joseph Lopez was spinning was literally impossible. Finally, Joseph Lopez knew that he was caught. He told police, yes, he did shoot her. But he said Natalie begged him to shoot her. He said they prayed together, and that after that, she, quote, knelt down on the ground, and that he knelt down along her left side and slightly in front of her, end quote. Then he said he shot her. Then he fled the scene, but not before stealing her purse and the gun. Police really didn't believe anything Joseph Lopez said because, number one, they knew he was a liar, and number two, they had started doing a deep dive into his past, and what they found was seriously disturbing. Joseph Lopez told police that he kept a journal in high school, a journal where he wrote stories about kidnapping people, torturing them, and executing them, according to the Denver Post. Now, there's nothing illegal or necessarily even alarming about writing horror stories, but he told investigators he had had fantasies about doing these things to people for real for a long time. So, at this point, people were asking a lot of questions that I think are very interesting. Like, we talk a lot about the right to die, but we're talking about people who are older or in pain. What about when it's a mental health issue? What about when it's a young person? There's a lot about this case that we still don't know because, of course, we'll never get the full truth from Joseph Lopez. Like, Did Natalie take the drugs herself, or could Joseph Lopez have injected her with those drugs to calm her down? And really, even if Natalie Bollinger did want to die, the fact is this was still murder. Joseph Lopez was a predator. He saw a vulnerable person, someone he was talking about wanting to end her own life. Instead of helping her or steering her towards some kinds of counseling or taking her to drop her off with a friend or family member at the hospital, he chose to live out a sick fantasy, and he chose to make her his victim. Joseph Lopez was charged with first-degree murder. And it later came out that Facebook had even played a role in helping catch him. The police were using old-school detective tactics, but they were also using social media wisely. It's actually good to see. It's good to see the Adams County Sheriff's Department doing a really good and thorough job of investigating and of using every tool they had at their disposal. The sheriff said they had found Joseph by searching the phone number from Natalie's text messages on Facebook. The search showed his mom's Facebook page, and that's how they first found him. But then, after Joseph Lopez had been charged, there was more drama. Because right before the trial was due to start, Joseph Lopez was offered a plea deal. He ended up pleading guilty to second-degree murder. The judge sentenced him to a maximum of 48 years in prison. That means that he will be in prison until he's at least 70 years old, but technically it does mean he will be eligible for parole at some point during his life. Ted Bollinger, Natalie's father, told the local news channel Denver 7 he was very upset about the DA's decision to offer Joseph that deal. Ted said, quote, "There's no justice in this. And for Adams County to have enough evidence to convict him and then make him an offer is a spit in my family's face. She was vulnerable and drugged," end quote. Then he addressed Joseph Lopez and he said, quote, "You premeditated, brutally shot and killed my baby. I asked for an eye for an eye. You've been protected. The Bollinger family had no say in this. This is a deal with the devil," end quote. At the time, a lot of people were talking about whether taking the plea deal was the right move. I'm not a lawyer, so of course this is only an opinion, but I can really see both sides of that argument because on the one hand, yes, they did have a tremendous amount of evidence. This was a premeditated murder and they had a confession. But on the flip side, there were some complications. For example, the defense was trying to have some of Natalie's text messages excluded. And without going super in depth into their arguments, if that had happened, I think that could have been catastrophic. Also, it's always a throw of the dice when you're dealing with a jury and human emotions. And this is such a strange story. I would worry that even if technically Joseph Lopez was totally guilty, that maybe there'd be one juror who might think she wanted to end her life and therefore they might want to let him off more lightly. So I do think that there was some risk there. And in the end, even though he will be eligible for parole, he will be an old man by the time that happens. But I can also totally respect and appreciate the feelings of some of Natalie's family members who feel like they were betrayed. Eventually, Natalie's family tried to move on. So did Sean Swartz. By the way, again, he was never charged with anything to do with Natalie's disappearance or death. He was completely cleared. But he continued to experience fallout from a lot of this social media stuff. Now, some of it, one could argue, he fed into himself because he was also posting, but the whole thing just seemed to get more and more toxic. Eventually, he started feuding with Natalie's twin sister, Alicia. Eventually, Alicia took out her own restraining order against Sean. And then, in October of 2019, Alicia disappeared. The Kansas Highway Patrol confirmed that there was a vehicle that was involved in a police pursuit. Alicia was a passenger in that vehicle. After police stopped the car, they took Alicia to a hotel where they dropped her off. And after that, she vanished. Fortunately, Alicia was found a few days later. She was safe and well. After the drama between Sean and Alicia, some other members of Natalie's family were saying they didn't feel safe either. They feel like Natalie's fear of Sean was part of the stresses that she was experiencing during the last days of her life. I can certainly appreciate their perspective. For me, this whole case has exposed the fact that you have vulnerable people. These are not public people. And when they feel like they're being stalked or targeted online, or their families are being stalked, at times, online sleuthing can be really dangerous. I think about this every single day in my job because there's no doubt that Facebook and other social media can be very powerful tools. They can give us information about what was inside a victim's mind before they disappeared or were murdered. They can put you in touch with people. They can make people feel comfortable about reaching out to me and others. But I think we have to be very careful with social media. We should be polite and courteous, back everything up with solid facts, and not succumb to what I call this kind of mob mentality. Whenever I find myself spending too long on social media, I start to remember I'm a reporter. I have 2 degrees in journalism. I have a PI license, and I'm going back to the basics. I go out in the field, get some fresh air, try to get some interviews, or if I need another perspective, I will find an expert with credentials to comment on a case, not just ask random people on Facebook. I think about the Natalie Bollinger case for another reason. As someone who suffered from depression, I think about some of the darkest times in my own life. Luckily for me, I've had wonderful friends and family who have been there for me at my darkest times. But even with that, depression can be fatal. Sometimes in the depths of depression, people do feel more comfortable talking to a stranger. I just wish that the stranger that Natalie had reached out to was someone who cared about her, not a psychopath who just wanted to use her to enact his own fantasies. And not to be corny or anything, but I put this episode out this week before the holidays because I just wanted to remind everyone, even though we are talking about crime, so many of these stories are horrific and they involve people doing very bad things to each other. I truly believe that the best way to try to find answers and justice is about all of us coming together, helping each other, being curious, and always being polite and kind. Because in the end, that's how we're going to find these answers. I really believe that. So I just want to say to everybody out there this holiday season and beyond, please be careful, be kind, and take care of each other. I'll talk to y'all after the holidays. I'm Katherine Townsend. This is Hell and Gone Murderline. Hell and Gone Murderline is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. It's written and narrated by me, Katherine Townsend, and produced by Gabby Watts. Music is by Ben Salee. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, and L.C. Crowley. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone Murderline at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145.
School of Humans.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.